From Buck Studio at Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Tom Clark, here again with Family Doc Zorba Pastor, here to talk with you about what's new in healthy living, share some down-to-earth advice, and some great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. If you have a question for Zorba, you can call us now at 1-800-462-7413. And, of course, along with your calls, some topics to talk about, Zorba.
Yes, we're going to talk about hugging. Does it actually make people feel good? Some interesting research that I'm sure.
That's right.
And we're going to talk about HPV vaccine for middle schoolers. Some amazing results we now know out of Scotland. It's a vaccine to prevent cervical cancer. If you could take a shot to prevent cancer, wouldn't you take it? And
What
this vaccine is about. Wonderful, wonderful data that just got released from the British Medical Journal that I want to share with everybody.
And a yummy recipe.
Oh, Tom, you're going to love this. You are going to love this. It's Parmigiana made with tofu. It's tofu Parmigiana. And I know how much you crave tofu, so you're going to crave this recipe.
Let's go to the phones. 1-800-462-7413. Our first caller joins us now, Zorba, a listener in Buffalo, New York. Hi.
Hi. So how are you today, Tom and Doctor?
Excellent. We're both great. I'll talk for Zorba.
Great to hear this. I have a question about frozen shoulder. I never heard of it till my doctor told me that it sounded like I had frozen shoulder when I was there. Mm-hmm. And it was in January last year. I fell on the ice walking, and I know I injured it a little bit, but I knew it wasn't broke. And I just thought it would improve, and it never did. It just seemed to get more and more sore as the year went on. So I thought, maybe I did something really bad to it.
Sure, of course.
But she said she thought it was frozen shoulder.
Yeah. So, first of all, you have pain in your shoulder. Tell me a little bit about it.
Yeah.
How much can you move your shoulder?
Well, the range of motion has decreased. Over my head is impossible.
Uh-huh.
And up my back,
It's
very difficult.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So what did she recommend? Then we'll talk a little bit about it.
She recommended that I do TPT.
Mm-hmm. Physical therapy.
And I said, can I just do that at home?
Mm-hmm.
And she said, well, sure.
Uh-huh. So I want to talk about that. I've got a question about this. So do you have a copay for PT, or do you have to pay for it out of pocket completely?
I'm not sure.
That's an important question, by the way, because PT can be very expensive. But if you have a copay, it's much more moderate. So, first off, frozen shoulder is kind of just a general term. We fall. We hurt ourselves. We may have an injury. It might be a rotator cuff injury. It may just be blood under in the bursa, which is sort of this fat pad in the shoulder. It may be a disruption of ligaments. Or it may just be everything is all swollen. And so then we stop using our shoulder, and then our range of motion, you know, the ability to do things becomes less and less because we're using it less and less. And we stop stretching it and moving it. And all of a sudden, we are limited to what we can do with our shoulder. And our shoulder is – it's the joint in the body that is has the greatest range of motion of any other joint. You think about a hip, goes back and forth, you know, sideways. But a shoulder goes in all kinds of different directions. And part of the joint itself, if you look at the bone, if you go to Google shoulder joint, you'll see that the cup is really very shallow compared to the cup of the hip, which is really quite big. So what you want to do is you want to get that shoulder moving again in a positive way. Physical therapy is the way to go if you can afford it. And I say that because if you have to pay totally out of pocket, it's really, you know, the default is, like, can I do it on my own? And yes, you go to YouTube, frozen shoulder, look at the exercises and do it. But PTs do an evaluation. They look at it. They give some recommendations. They see how you're doing, you know, your shoulder movement. And then you go back sometimes two or three times. Some people go back more often than that. And then they look at the exercise that you're doing and see whether or not you're doing them right. And it's a training. It's a training thing. And also, they have other modalities. They have ultrasound. They have other ways that they can do it. But they do an evaluation to see which way you go, and you are much more likely to have success with physical therapy than on your own, with a frozen shoulder. Now, Let's assume it's a post-athletic injury. You're a hockey player and women's hockey, and you fall down and you hold your shoulder, and, you know, you're women's hockey and your team, you know, just won the Buffalo Open hockey tournament. And you can go to YouTube and you know what you're doing because you got all the other hockey players telling you what to do, right? And they'll go, right. Do it this way. I had the problem. But you're not a hockey player. I don't know. You know, so you need somebody who has a little more expertise. So PT works. The other thing that works is, are you taking an anti-inflammatory?
I take Aleve.
How much?
2 tablets twice a day.
Good. That's the dose. That's the appropriate dose for this, because that would really help with it. Now, your chances of success with physical therapy, doing it on a rigorous basis, being 95% compliant for 12 weeks are really, really high. I'd probably put that at 80 or 90%. But you've got to follow those exercises once or twice a day, and you've got to do it for 12 weeks. It's going to take 3 months. It's not going to take a few days. It's not going to take a week. But, you know, you don't have to worry because you're not going to get back on the ice playing hockey for a while. Well, thank you for your call. Good luck. Go to PT. I recommend, but check with your insurance first. See if you can afford it. You might have an HSA account that pays for the copay. But physical therapy is the way to go.
Okay. Thank you very much,
You're
Doctor.
Welcome.
800-462-7413. Before our next call, Zorba, hugging.
Shocking information. Yes.
Hugging.
Shocking.
Makes you
shocking.
Happier
yes.
and healthier.
Really? Shocking. Shocking.
Well, the
shocking
healthier part is a little bit shocking.
Well, first of all, with homage, we had a wonderful, wonderful senator in Wisconsin. His name was William Proxmire, Bill Proxmire.
Sure.
And Bill Proxmire, for those of you who remember Bill Proxmire, he's an amazing guy. He would stand out in front of Camp Randall and shake hands with thousands of people before everybody. You remember that?
Yeah.
In a football game. He'd say, "Hi, Bill Proxmire." And he'd just shake hands. He wouldn't talk to anybody because everyone wanted to shake his hands. He probably shook. Sorry, Mom, if I said shake. Shook a million hands before he finally passed away. He had something called the Golden Fleece Award. Do you remember the Golden Fleece Award?
Oh, sure, sure.
Well, the Golden Fleece Award was money that was spent from the government on things that it shouldn't be spent.
Well, I don't remember the bill, but he introduced legislation every day for, like, forever.
Yes, for the Golden Fleece Award. How are we fleecing the government? This, by the way, is not supported by government funds, but this would be an example of research that would win the Golden Fleece Award. And let me tell you what the research shows. The research shows hugging helps your mood. Hugging helps your mood.
But I said healthier, and that's a little bit of
well,
a
surprise. Well, so here's the other part of it. So he would say the Golden Fleece Award because it was like research on insects, which turned out to actually be important. But actually, it showed that hugging increased if you had negative feelings and someone hugged you, you actually felt better. And its hugs varied it from person to person. For some people, it was better than others. But if you were single or married, had a relationship, or male or female, hugs seemed to help. But it also seemed to decrease blood pressure, and it increased oxytocin. Now, oxytocin, there's something called what I call the DOS system, dopamine, oxytocin, and serotonin. And if DOS is activated, you feel better. And when you feel better, you do better things. And you may make better choices when you're eating. You may make better choices when you're actually exercising. You may make better choices in your relationships.
Yeah. Maybe
you may not yell at people.
Maybe you have little stuff going on that you would notice if you weren't feeling better.
Exactly.
But, yeah.
Exactly. So activating the DOXY system, this is activating the oxytocin system. So even though the study looks like maybe it would be the Bill Proxmire Golden Fleece Award, it actually is a good study. My recommendation is hug thy neighbor, but make sure thy neighbor wants to be hugged.
Well, I'm married. I don't think my wife would like it if I hugged my neighbor.
That's what I mean. You've got to be careful on who you send out those hugs to, especially in this day and age.
Hey, honey, my doctor told me to do this.
You've got to make sure that your hug is not misinterpreted, because that's another study.
Yeah. Well, do you hug enough, do you think?
I hug quite a bit, but I don't know if I hug enough. You mean like my wife and my kids? I hug my when my kids come over, we hug all the time. Yeah. Do I hug enough? I don't know. That's a good question. You know who you'd have to ask?
Well, I'm a little guilty. I think I hug enough, but I'm not absolutely
sure. Well, why don't
sure.
you go home and hug your wife?
I'll check it out.
You check it out.
800-462-74.
And make it a bear hug. Make it a bear hug. I mean, really a bear, a strong bear hug.
Okay, I'll have to do some weights.
I want to chime in something else about hugs, for instance. Men never hugged when I was a kid. You know that. You remember that. Never hugged. I never hugged my father. Never hugged my father until I was much older. I remember when Khrushchev hugged Castro, and it made news, and these were men hugging. Yeah, and I remember there were comments in the Chicago Tribune about men hugging men. How disgusting. It was really thought of. And then things changed. And you know where it changed that I remember where it changed a lot? Bill Clinton. He hugged everyone. And all of a sudden, they started hugging. And around that
time—
That's another story. Yeah. But then you also started seeing football players, basketball players, hockey players. They all started hugging each other. And all of a sudden, it changed in society. But it was not that way when we were children.
Yeah, you're right. 800-462-7413. Question for Zorba? 1-800-462-7413. Now, Zorba, a listener is with us from Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Hi.
Hi, Zorba. Hi, Tom. How are you guys doing today?
Okay. How can we help?
Okay. I had a quick question about something that happened to me last year in August. I was getting sharp pains in the top of my head and went in just to get it checked out because I had a baby boy due in October. So I, wanted to start taking better care of myself. I went in. They found out I had a sinus infection, an upper respiratory infection, a ruptured eardrum. But they wanted to send me for a... just a CAT scan, just to make everything, make sure everything is okay. Mm-hmm. They happened to find out that I had, a disease called moya mm-hmm. During that CAT scan. Uh-huh. Well, the doctor did the scope and everything, uh-huh. and they ran up my leg, up to mm-hmm. my brain, and he said the collateral vessels, that had grown around the blockage were pretty large, and I was getting adequate blood flow. Didn't mm-hmm. show any signs of a stroke.
Uh-huh. Right.
But other than that, he didn't really offer a whole lot. He said, you don't have to change anything. You're not on any restrictions. Uh-huh. And he's just like, just monitor for signs of a stroke. So my question was, what is the likelihood that someone with this disease can go without having a stroke? Because mm-hmm. I'd like to avoid that if at all possible.
Of course. Everyone wants to avoid a stroke. Nobody goes, gee, give me a stroke. Bring it on.
Yeah.
First of all, vascular changes in the brain are common. They're not uncommon. In fact, 1% of the population has an aneurysm in their brain. 1%. That's a lot. 1 out of 100 people walk around with an aneurysm. 99.9% of them, I don't know what the number is, but it's up in the 99 percentile, never bleed, never do anything. But then you hear about a person who's 35 years old, they had an aneurysm in the brain, they're walking down the street, they collapse and they die. In fact, I had a friend when I was in high school. That's what happened to his mother. His mother had an aneurysm. She was in her 30s or in her 40s. And one day she collapsed. And when they did the autopsy, because that's what they did in those days, they found out she had an aneurysm. But it turns out with MRA scans, which are looking at MR scans of the arteries, we've discovered that aneurysms are very, very common. And what you have, which is a different abnormality, moya that you were born with, blood vessels then grew around it, is an analogous abnormality. In other words, it's a similar abnormality.
Well, can you tell me what moya is?
It's a definition of what's looking in the vascular part of the brain. So it's a vascular abnormality. The blood vessels look different. That's all. They look different. How do they look? It's a definition of what they are. And I believe it's a genetic defect from what I understand. It's something that happens at birth. Did they explain that to you? I don't think it develops after birth.
Well, he said that it happens to infants when they're born sometimes, or it can happen from an injury. He said there was a laundry list of reasons that could cause it.
Okay, so one of the things may be genetic happening in the wound. And infant bleeds, by the way, in the brain turn out to be much more common than we think. And then the brain, especially as it's growing, has this great ability to make changes. So the answer is the chances that this is going to bleed for you are the same, probably very similar to the 1% of the population that just has other aneurysms in their brain, which means go and be fine. That's what he did. There are no other recommendations as far as I know for this.
Okay. Yeah, he didn't really give me a lot. He said I asked a lot of questions during the scope procedure.
Sure.
But then he gave me some stuff that made me not remember it, so I had to go back and ask him again everything.
Well, then didn't you go and look at this on the web then after that?
I did, but a lot of it was kind of a doom and gloom situation. You know, you start stressing out
that's true.
Once people are diagnosed with this, within 2 years, they are at very high risk to have a stroke, or that it's progressive and it'll progress to the other side. Because right now it's behind my right eye, I guess is mm-hmm. where it's at. Mm-hmm. And the doctor said there's about a 20% chance that it could develop on the left side too. But he really didn't go into a lot of details. And he said that the collateral vessels could rupture. He said some doctors are split on whether or not there's a higher risk for them rupturing or a lower risk than the original.
This is the same risk that doctors have had for aneurysms that occur in the brain. The question is, should everyone be screened? Should we take the aneurysm and should we clip it and do brain surgery on people to clip the aneurysm to keep it from actually bleeding? But it turned out when they actually did research on this that the risk of actually getting a stroke with the surgery was the risk of doing nothing with the aneurysm. And it probably is the same, although I'm not an expert on this at all. It may be the same with moyamoya, that what you do is when you leave things alone. Because keep in mind, you had no symptoms at all. They just found this by accident when you had a sinus infection.
Yeah, the pains I was experiencing wouldn't have anything to do with this.
Right.
But my grandfather's side of his family, all the men in his family had died of strokes. So when you say that it's genetic, that makes me think that I wonder if this was something that was undiagnosed on his side
of
the family.
How old were they when they died?
My grandfather's father was in his early 50s.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And he had a massive stroke and died. And then my mm-hmm. grandfather, a couple years back, mm-hmm. had a heart attack. He was actually on the news. Uh-huh. President Obama had given an award to my grandmother for saving his life.
Because
he just collapsed and coded in the middle of a flea market. And she started doing CPR on him and saved his life. But he had a heart attack. Well, they found out that he also had a stroke at some point in his life.
Oh, so this may be something genetic there. A couple of things. Wait, she got an award from Obama for?
Yeah. She has a signed award from Obama for maintaining her CPR training. Just getting out there and doing what needed to be done. But the EMT said, if you hadn't started CPR when you did, your husband wouldn't be here. He flatlined 3 times before he got to the hospital.
Wow. Wow, your grandmother was really something. And they obviously had a good relationship.
Oh yeah, yeah, they are hilarious. Yeah. Like around the holidays and just visit them, it is hilarious.
Yeah, I bet they are. Did your relatives smoke? Did they have high blood pressure? So those are do you smoke?
I used to, but I haven't in about 12 years.
Uh-huh. Okay,
my grandfather smoked mm-hmm. and dipped a lot mm-hmm. throughout his life. Uh-huh. Same thing with his father.
Do you have high blood? Do you have high blood pressure?
Yes, I do.
Are you treated?
I try and eat better and exercise, uh-huh. but not as far as medication-wise. No, I'm not treated. And we also have high bad cholesterol and mm-hmm. low good cholesterol.
And are you on medication for it?
I am not.
Okay, so here's what we have to do. If you have a fear of strokes, you've got a strong family history for strokes. You've got somebody who died of a stroke in their 50s. You've got a grandfather with an issue. You have a history of heart disease in your family. You want to take better care of yourself. You've got a 6-month-old. Okay, so you want to reduce all the other risk factors for stroke. A,
yeah.
You want to eat right. You want to be on the DASH diet, D-A-S-H. It's just a diet to lower hypertension. See if your blood pressure is under control. If it doesn't meet the guidelines for blood pressure, get yourself on a pill. That's it, number one. Number two,
okay.
Exercise, good moderate exercise, 3 to 4 days a week. You're going to eat right. You want to be on an exercise program. Number three, if you have too much bad cholesterol and not enough good cholesterol, get yourself on a statin like Lipitor. You want to lower the cholesterol. You've got a family history. Very, very important. And finally, you want to be on the proper weight. So the answer is, this is a good call that you made because you probably need to be on a cholesterol-lowering agent and you may need to be on a blood pressure pill because those are factors you can change to reduce your risk of stroke. And they may enter into whether or not these blood vessels break.
Yeah, I'm really glad I made this call then, yeah, because I was wanting to get more feedback on it. And the doctor, last time I tried to call him, I didn't hear back from him, so.
The feedback is you have things that you can take. Take action.
Yeah. You're doing the right thing about eating right because you're listening to Zorba Pastor on Your Health with great recipes.
That's right.
With the exception of the recipe coming up this week.
The tofu recipe.
Absolutely. My son is a lot like you. I have an 8-year-old as well, Tommy. He doesn't want anything that sounds even remotely healthy.
What kind of guy? Thanks so much for the
call.
Thanks
a lot.
Thank you. You'll have a great day.
You too. 800-462-7413 is our number. And before we take a break, Zorba, please unholster your gavel and dust off your silky black robe. Time for another edition of Judge Zorba.
Call to order.
Okay, today's case comes to us from a listener named Paul. He writes, Dr. Zorba, approximately 10 times as many people are allergic to dogs as are allergic to peanuts. What do you think about this with regard to dogs being allowed on airplanes? Dogs or no dogs?
Well, first of all, you don't eat a dog. We've got to talk about peanuts.
But you're still allergic.
You consume peanuts. But people who are allergic to peanuts and consume a peanut can die from consuming that peanut. Yeah. How many people die from an allergy to dogs?
Yeah.
But
none.
There are but,
almost
but
none. Almost none.
I mean almost none. I don't know how many recorded cases. Mm-hmm. Now, on the other hand, if you're allergic to a dog and you sneeze and all of a sudden you have this little furry creature next to you on the airplane, what should you do? Change seats. And you can ask the steward or the stewardess to do that. So the question is, what do I think about dogs on airplanes? I will come down on it's the decision of the airline. If you notice, I finesse that. Sometimes the judge does not make a judgment one way or another because I have a dog. Now, he doesn't travel on the airplane. He's too big, but I have a son and daughter-in-law, and they take their dog on the airplane, and I wouldn't want to insult them because it would cause family problems. Therefore, I will be, what is it called, recused? Is it recused from doing it?
Yeah.
I'm recusing myself from making this particular decision. There we are. Court adjourned.
On Judge Zorba's bench, every dog has its day in court.
Oh.
If you have a case for the good doc, just post on our Facebook page or send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
More of your calls coming up. A tasty tofu recipe.
Delicious.
All right.
Delicious.
All right.
Delicious.
Right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRX, the Public Radio Exchange. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. That number again, 800-462-7413. 1-800-462-7413. But Zorba, before our next call.
Come on, you can say it. Go ahead, say it.
Tofu.
Tofu, that's right. You
Parmigiana.
Can, that's right. Parmesan is good, but you can say tofu again. Just kind of say it with feeling. Like
tofu.
That's right, tofu.
Okay.
Tofu. Now, when I picked out this recipe, I thought of you, Tom, because we haven't had enough tofu recipes so that we can rescue from the tofu-free universe that you live in.
If I was a smoker, I'd say I'm going out for a cigarette while you do this recipe.
I'm going out for a cigarette. Those were the days, my friend. We thought they'd never end. Luckily, we
let's do the
smoking.
Recipe.
Okay. Start out with a quarter cup of plain dry breadcrumbs, or you could use panko.
Quarter cup plain dry breadcrumbs.
Yeah, or panko. Mm-hmm. A teaspoon of Italian seasoning. Pick your favorite.
Yeah, little tea Italian seasoning.
Yeah, you can use oregano or something else. I've been in love Penzies, P-E-N-Z-Y-S. Penzies are a Wisconsin company. Mm-hmm. They make the best Italian dry seasoning on this earth. Okay, you ready for this?
Yes.
1 14-ounce package of firm or preferably extra firm water-packed tofu mm-hmm. that you rinse.
14-ounce package firm or extra firm water-packed tofu
rinsed. Quarter teaspoon of garlic powder.
Quarter little tea.
Quarter teaspoon of salt.
quarter little tea.
You're going to have some olive oil, 2 teaspoons plus another tablespoonful.
2 teaspoons plus a tablespoon extra virgin olive oil divided.
Small onion chopped.
Small onion chopped.
8 ounces of mushrooms, regular button mushrooms.
8 ounces white mushrooms thinly sliced.
Quarter cup grated Parmesan cheese.
Quarter cup grated Parmesan cheese.
You can't have Parmigiano with Parmesan cheese. I mean, you knew that.
Right.
As much as you cook.
Yeah.
You knew.
But I figured that out by the name of the recipe.
You figured that out from the name. That's right. And you have to have tofu in a recipe that says tofu. Mm-hmm. 3/4 cup of prepared, you know, marinara sauce that you pick your favorite.
3/4 cup.
Half a cup of shredded mozzarella cheese. Skim if you can get it.
Half a cup shredded part skim mozzarella cheese.
Yeah. I don't know what part skim means. I mean, it's probably like 1 or 2% that they make it from. And a couple of tablespoonfuls of fresh basil.
Yeah. 2 big tea chopped fresh basil. You didn't let me do earlier. You interrupted me. Yeah. 3/4 cup prepared marinara sauce, preparably low sodium.
Yeah, low sodium if you have.
Yeah.
You know, my question is, when people listen to this and they're driving, are we keeping them from looking to the road and are we causing car accidents as they go through it? Certainly if they write it down where they're driving, we are.
Yeah, but with people with really good memories.
That's right, good memories. That's right. They can remember. This would be a lot. Okay. Here we go. Combine the breadcrumbs or panko and Italian seasoning in a shallow bowl. Mix it around. Cut the tofu lengthwise into four long pieces. Sprinkle both sides of the tofu with garlic powder, salt, and dredge in the breadcrumb mixture. So you've got a nice, if you will, tofu plank. Heat 2 teaspoons of olive oil in a large nonstick skillet. Very important that it be nonstick over medium heat. Add the onion and cook, stirring until it's brown, about 3 minutes. Add the mushrooms, you know, and cook them until they release their juice and brown a bit, about 4 more minutes. Put that in a bowl. Then put that on the side. Put a tablespoon of oil in the pan. I would also spray it with some spray pan to make sure there's oil over the whole thing. Add the tofu steaks, these little planks, the steaks. Cook them until they're browned on both sides, about 3 minutes. Turn it over. Sprinkle with Parmesan. Spoon the mushroom mixture over the tofu. Pour marinara sauce over the whole thing. Scatter the mozzarella on the top. Cover and cook until it's hot and the cheese is melted in the tofu, which is about 3 minutes. And then sprinkle with basil and then serve it. Take a nice pot and actually put that on a trivet right in the middle of the table where you're serving, and it really makes a nice looking dinner. It'll be very good. All right. Okay. So while Tom is sleeping, if you want a copy of today's delicious tofu recipe for the tofu enthusiasts out there, and you can tell by the variety of tofu in the store, there are tofu enthusiasts out there, you can get it on the web. Go to ZorbaPastor.org, and you can find tofu parmigiana. That's ZorbaPastor.org. And don't forget, you can find us on Facebook. And I think Tom has just woken up.
And time for our next call. 800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. Now, Zorba, a listener with us in Edmond, Oklahoma. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. How can we help?
Well, I hope you can give me some advice for solving nocturnal leg cramps. They're really killing me, I think. Mm-hmm. Any tips you might have?
Oh, sure. Tell me a little bit about it. How long have you had it for?
Oh, gosh. A little over a year.
Mm-hmm.
And I've tried different things.
Mm-hmm.
Exercise. I always exercise anyway, mostly every day. Mm-hmm. And anyway, nothing seems to help.
Uh-huh.
The doctor just recently prescribed quinine capsules that had to be compounded.
Mm-hmm.
Those are pretty expensive.
Yeah, they don't make them. And actually, it's been shown not to really do anything. That's why the feds. We used to have quinine on the market, something called Quinam, Quinamn. It was on for probably 50 to 75 years. And then the feds looked at a lot of the old remedies and they said, well, you have to do a double-blind study. You've got 5 years to prove it actually works, because when they used to come on the market, they didn't do double-blind studies. And the quinine, although it's an old remedy, doesn't work. I mean, they proved it didn't work, so they stopped making it. You can get it from Canada, by the way. Go to a Canadian pharmacy. But it doesn't work. So I don't recommend it.
Well, I've just, you know, I tried different positions. Mm-hmm. I used a heating pad, that, you know, none, but nothing seems to work for sure.
There are a number of Parkinson drugs that actually do work. There's a drug called Requip, R-E-Q-U-I-P, which is now a generic, and other drugs for Parkinson's disease. And they work pretty well for people with restless legs. You know, you take a dose at bedtime, and your legs are much better. And you ought to call your doctor and ask it. Requip is one of the drugs that's on the market. You can also look it up and Google it. But they work really well for restless legs, and that's what I would consider doing. The Quinan doesn't do much. There are a lot of folk remedies. Some people say vitamin E, 400 to 800 units works for them. Other people, you know, the other folk remedy that works for some people is warm milk. Warm milk has been shown, not a double-blind study, but anecdotal information. Warmed at night with a little bit of sugar in the milk or honey in the milk works. Some people take a shot of brandy at bedtime, you know, a little shot of brandy at bedtime, or plum brandy. It's used at bedtime. So these are all things that, you know, that people have used. Another drug that can be used is a drug called gabapentin, and it's an anti-seizure drug that's used in neuropathic pain. And for some people, if they take that an hour before they go to sleep, that'll work. And then another drug called doxepin, D-O-X-E-P-I-N, 10 milligrams an hour before you go to sleep. It's an antidepressant, but in a very small dose, it helps some people. But Requip is the drug specifically for restless legs, and that has been proven in double-blind placebo-controlled trials to work.
Oh, thank you. Is that R-E-Q-U-I-P?
Right,
Requip?
Right. But okay. The generic works for it. And all the anti-Parkinsonian drugs seem to have an effect. So there are other drugs, and if you're going to choose one, I would then choose the cheapest generic to start with.
You know, can I ask you, how much does this bother you?
Well, I will go in spells, you know, where for a week it's every night, and I'm up several times a night, jumping up to try to, you know, avoid the bad cramp. And then other times I'll go two or three nights, and it won't seem to bother me. But when I'm going through a spell, sometimes it just lasts for weeks and weeks, and I get pretty frantic about it, you know.
Yeah, so it can be very bothersome and really keeps people awake, and it's very uncomfortable. Yeah. So I would try those. I'd stay away from the quinine because it doesn't work.
Okay, thank you so much for your help. I appreciate it, and I enjoy your show very much.
Well, thank you for saying that, and thank you for that call at 800-462-7413. Now, before we take a break, Zorba, time again to fire off another edition of Disagreeing with the Doc.
Disagreeing with the Doc. Disagreeing with the Doc. Oh, oh, oh.
The following email came to us from Artillery Shell Number 200 of the Brew City Bruisers Roller Derby Team in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. She writes, "Hi, Dr. Zorba and Tom. I wanted to comment on your recommendations about falling, especially while roller skating. I'm a roller derby player, and we have always been taught to fall forward, not backwards. When you fall backwards onto your butt, you risk breaking your hip, plus it takes a lot longer to get up. Keeping a low center of gravity and falling forward allows you to catch yourself and then get back up quickly. Now, mind you, we wear wrist guards and knee pads as well as elbow pads, helmets, and mouth guards while skating, so that probably makes a difference."
Maybe that's the answer for falls for adult seniors.
"I love your show," she says, "and listen almost every week."
Well,
almost.
Almost. Almost. That's right. Almost. Right. Got it. Almost. Well, I think that's good advice when you're a roller skater. That's very good advice. You know, falling, the main thing is not to put your wrist out and try to stop your fall. That's the main. That's where most of it occurs that way. And I've read articles that say you want to fall on your butt or on your side because that's where muscles are, and that's going to take it. But it may be that when you're roller skating, you should go forward because falling backwards, think about it. You have all the energy. When you're roller skating, it's different than when we're walking. They're going quickly. And so when they fall, it's a different energy component, and there are different vectors that are going because they're on roller skates versus people who are actually walking on the sidewalk. But you know what? Anything that works other than putting out your wrist to stop the fall yeah. is probably a good thing. And protecting your head is the other important thing, especially as you get older, protecting your head.
Did you ever watch roller derby on television?
When I was a kid, I did. I found it pretty boring. My memory, you know,
it was good when they knocked each other.
Yeah. Do you ever? But my memory on TV was that it was in black and white. Did you ever watch roller derby?
Yeah. Well, black and white for me, too.
Yeah, it's black and white in my memory. But I would love to go to roller derby. Maybe we should get out and go to, you know what? Let's go. I will make some wonderful tofu sandwiches, and let's go out and go to a roller derby event.
Both of those sound really good to me. Is Zorba cruising for a bruising with something he said? Call him out by posting on our Facebook page or by sending us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
More of your calls coming up, another interesting topic to talk about, and our medical Mythbuster segment, all right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRX, the Public Radio Exchange. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. 800-462-7413 if you have a question for Zorba. But first, Zorba, a new shot to protect against cervical cancer?
Well, new meaning that it's about 5 or 10 years old.
Oh, but I new, didn't really.
But new in terms of the fact that for many people, really don't even think about it. So cervical cancer, most cervical cancer is caused by HPV, human papillomavirus vaccine. It may turn out to be all cervical cancer, but certainly the vast, vast majority. And we have a shot that takes care of most of the HPV viruses that actually cause cervical cancer. And the recommendation is these shot. It should be given at when girls are 12 and 13 years of age, and also boys, by the way, for other reasons to help the prevention. So in Scotland, they had universal immunization, in other words, where they got many, many girls to be immunized at 12 and 13, and then some also got immunized when they were closer to 16 and 18, and that's because they missed the initial part of the cervical cancer when it was introduced. So the screening program started in 2008, 11 years ago. They looked at the drop in cervical cancer now because those girls have now become young women. They've now done pap tests. They've looked at the number of abnormal pap tests, and the reduction in the number of abnormal pap tests is dramatic, okay? There is an 86% reduction in high-grade cervical abnormalities for the girls who were immunized between 12 and 13. 86%. In other words, that means that there is probably in Scotland going to be an 86% reduction in cervical cancer. We can really look at that because the abnormalities in the pap often mean that they're going to develop cervical cancer. So you've got a shot to prevent cervical cancer in women. The real issue is every parent ought to give their middle school kid a shot. Yeah. And the boys also get shots because it prevents the transmission of HIV and it prevents penile
cancer. Girls in the United States get these.
Well, that's a very interesting thing. There are a number of parents who do not give their kids the immunization when they're in middle school because they believe that they're actually giving their children a license to engage in promiscuous sex before marriage. Here it is. I'm giving you a shot to prevent cervical cancer, which is a sexually transmitted disease. That means I'm telling you that you can go out and you can have sex with young boys. That's obviously a silly, dumb thing
to think
about.
Yeah, that's really bad
about.
Thinking on the part of the parents.
I mean, because here it is. You may prevent cervical cancer when they're older. And the other thing about this that's very important, it showed the sooner in the age you give the shot, the more protective. So the 12 and 13-year-olds are much better to get the shot than the 16 and 18-year-olds. We should have universal immunization for young girls, 12 and 13. If you're a parent, make sure you get your young girl and young man immunized for HPV because it may save their life.
1-800-462-7413 if you have a question for Zorba. 800-462-7413. Now back to the phones we go, Zorba. Milwaukee, Wisconsin listener is with us. Hi.
Hi. frequent listener, first-time caller.
Mm-hmm. How can we help?
How are y'all? Yeah,
very good, thank you.
I was prompted to call. I heard something about toe fungus several weeks ago. You know, after the bit on cervical cancer, I feel a little embarrassed about this life-threatening issue. But I've had it about the turn of the century. I joined a club with a pool and thought I'd be ran around the pool area, the locker room, without any shower shoes and developed athlete's foot, which I took care of with an over-the-counter product. But I'm guessing, I know coincidence doesn't mean causality, but soon thereafter, my toes began exhibiting fungus, and it went to just horrible looking. So I've had this, more than 15 years. Uh-huh. And I think the standard wisdom is there's nothing much you can do except now. My podiatrist told me a few years ago he invested in a very expensive, is it laser or ultraviolet light? Uh-huh. I think that at any rate, I didn't do it because I think it was over $1,000 for the first toe and almost $1,000 for every toe thereafter. So
sure, a lot of money.
Yeah, I'm wondering if there's anything new or even old that I haven't heard of.
There are a few things. First of all, athlete's foot is a fungus. It's actually not caused. We really don't actually catch it in the pool, and it's from moisture. So the reason why it's associated with pools is because it has to do with moisture that's going on, and we don't often, take those little piggies, those little piggy toes in the feet, and make sure you get rid of the moisture. But once you start to dry your feet, you're fine. So it's a moisture issue. It's not an issue we really, really catch it from anyone else. It's just in the environment. So that's athlete's foot. Toe fungus. There are very effective medications which you can get with a doctor's prescription that work 80% of the time. And the medication that is used is called Lamisil, L-A-M-I-S-I-L. It was very expensive, but now it's a generic. It's not expensive. And you take it once a day for 12 weeks. That's what you do. It's one of the treatments. The other treatment is you take it 1 week on, 3 weeks off, and you do 3 or 4 cycles of that. 80% chance your toe fungus will go away. And if it doesn't, if you treat it a second time, whatever that 20, if that 20% failure rate, treat it a second time, 80% of those will actually go away. So it's got about an 80 to 90% cure rate if you take it the right way. Takes about 6 months to know because it takes 6 months for that great toe, the big toenail, to grow out. So you're not going to see anything right away. It takes about 6 months for the new nail. But Lamisil is good, not expensive. If you've got a drug card, it's a generic drug. If not, shop around for it. But I wouldn't spend $1,000 in each toe for a laser, not at all.
Indeed. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. You take care now.
Thanks. We appreciate the call at 800-462-7413. Okay, Zorba, time now for our medical Mythbuster segment. This email came to us from a listener named Larry. He writes, "Dear Dr. Zorba, I just love the show. I've heard doctors say that if you eat 3 meals a day, you should have 3 bowel movements a day." My thought...
What if you eat 4 meals a day, 4 bowel movements, 6 movements a day, you have 6 bowel movements.
I think you've answered his question. My thought is that if your body is using fuel, like a car, you use up most of the fuel and then void the waste. The car uses pounds of gas, and what comes out are
gallons.
Gases.
Gallons.
Pounds go in, ounces come out. Any thoughts on this?
Well, first of all, you are right. You eat and the body gets rid of the stuff. But bowel movements vary. They generally vary from 3 a day to 1 every 3 days. And everyone has sort of a natural occurrence. If it goes beyond 3 days, you can run into problems.
Most people don't have 3 bowel movements.
No, some people have 3 a day.
Do they really?
Some people have 3 a day, and that's obviously. Are you a 1 a day person? You're a 1 a day. But some people have 2 and 3 a day, and they're just fine.
Yeah.
We don't have to get.
If I don't take the medicine, I have 1 every 3 or 4 days.
I was going to say, we do not have to get into the detail of our bowel movements on this show. We share things, but we don't have to share those delicate matters. I mean, this is not the poop show or the poop test.
Well, we put this email near the end of the show so we wouldn't lose all our listeners. Have a potential myth for us? Dr. Zorba's always a warm, cleansing fountain of helpful information.
God, that is disgusting.
Just post on our Facebook page or send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org. I was going to make a bubbly, farty sound, but I'm not going to do it.
Well, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
800-462-7413. To the phones again, Zorba, listener with us in Spokane, Washington. Hi.
Hi, Dr. Zorba. Thanks for taking my question. I love your program. My question was about the nutritious value of food after it's reheated. I live by myself. I cook probably 90% of my meals.
Good for you.
I do shopping at the farmer's market during the summer, you know, good food. And I just I don't like to cook the whole meal every day.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'll make say a chicken curry that I can use for three or four meals,
mm-hmm.
and then just maybe add a fresh vegetable at each meal. And I just got to wondering recently about how nutritious is that chicken curry when I eat it 4 days later.
Sure.
I don't reheat the whole thing every time. I just take out what I need and put it into a bowl, then reheat it in the microwave using paper towels for the cover and not plastic wrap. But just what should I be cooking more often, or am I not losing too much of the nutrition in that food by reheating it?
Well, first of all, you're making your own food. Congratulations. I mean, that's really the important thing. But because if you get pre-made meals and you look at the number of ingredients on the back, you know, it's mind-boggling what goes into a frozen, what I would call a TV dinner, but I don't know, you know, I don't know what they're called these days,
right.
But TV dinners are what they are. You know, and there are, you know, anywhere between 25 and 500 ingredients, it looks, always looks. I mean, the label is often, you know, it often is, you know, it's in, you know, it's an 8-point type, and it often takes off half the back. And that's the reason is when they're industrialized food, they manufacture it and put a lot of stuff in it that you do not need.
Right.
And we don't know what that means, but we know that all that extra stuff is not nutritious. That much we know. Whether it's bad for us, we don't know, but we know it's not good for us.
Right.
So cooking your own food is great. And cooking for one, it's really important. You don't want to cook for one every single day. So the real question is, what about reheating? And the answer is, when you reheat things, you do lose a little, but you don't lose a lot.
Okay.
And so the way you're doing it is right. You make the meal, then you put it in the refrigerator so it stays stable, and then you take out part of it and you heat it up to the point where you can eat it. You're not going to lose that much nutrition, not at all. And it's really the vitamins. Some of the vitamins are more some of the vitamins lose more with heat than others. But by adding a fresh vegetable, what you're doing is you're really adding the vitamins that you may have lost when you're reheating the cooking that you're doing initially with the curry. So as the perfect example. So adding something to it actually is adding nutritious. So you're probably nutrition neutral to the first meal because you're adding something fresh to the second meal.
Right.
And the more colorful the meal, at least initially, plentiful fruits and vegetables, color and nutrition go hand in hand. Colorful meals are actually better for you. The beige American diet is bad for you. You know,
white. No, I've got lots of color in my food.
So that's it. You're doing a good job. So, so what sort of stuff do you like to cook?
Curry
is great.
Lots of curries, I will sometimes just do chicken baked with a little bit of seasoning and then add lots of veggies to it. I eat a lot of rice.
But this is really – this is the right way to think about cooking and going to the farmer's market, making food part of your life and integrating it into your life. And a lot of people look at it as, oh, God, I have to make dinner. You know, so it's not part of their life. It's like something that's a chore. I mean, if you have to feed 12 people at home and you have to do it every single day on the farm, that's a chore because it's 12 people. But for yourself, it should be a joy.
Yeah.
But you don't want to do it every night. You want to do it. You want to make good stuff. And then the other nights, because doing it every single night is more work.
It becomes a chore.
It becomes a chore. So you've really mastered things. So adding the fresh veggie does.
And I'm a good cook, too, so I really enjoy having good food around, and some of it even tastes better the second day.
It does. There's no doubt that soups and other things, beans, often taste better. There are many things that taste much better the next day because I'm not sure exactly why, but the tastes come together. Certainly, soups to me always taste better the next day. There's no doubt about it. And on special meals, I will make a brisket. I love making a brisket, and I use about 3 different recipes. And I add a bunch of tomatoes. I add apricots. I add craisins, which are dried cranberries. I add white raisins. And I had to do this. We were having a Passover dinner. And I knew I wouldn't have time to do it the day before based on it. So I made it 3 days before, and I sliced it so everything would get in the middle of the brisket. And then every single day I tasted it because I had it in the refrigerator, and it got better and better and better. So after 3 days, the meat was fork tender, and everything came in, and it turned out to be the best brisket. So now I make this brisket 3 days in advance because it tastes much better than making it that day.
That's right. That's right. Sounds good.
Yeah. Well, keep cooking. I love cooking,
Thank
too.
You. Thank I you. Too, I appreciate so. Your information.
My pleasure.
Thanks so much for that call at 800-462-7413. And before we head out today, Zorba, let's open up the Zorba Pastor on Your Health inbox and share a listener email. This one comes to us from Dennis in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Zorba, I've often told my wife that when I have a day when I'm full of energy and have an extra great feeling of wellness, without fail, I'll get sick within a day or two. When one of her coworkers told her she felt unusually great and energetic early this week, my wife told her that, according to my crazy theory, she would feel deathly ill very soon. Sure enough, the next day her coworker showed up with a miserable cold and then promptly blamed me. Is there any plausible medical explanation for my theory?
Yes. Yes, the same medical explanation that we have for voodoo dolls. When you put pins and voodoo dolls in the right place, you will have lots and lots of problems. So I put this into the voodoo doll category, and the answer is yes, of course. It's the same truth that we know with voodoo dolls. Now, of course, there's not truth in it. You know, it's myth. It's myth.
A good time to end the show. If you missed anything
I could have ended the show when we discussed poop
or just
farts. We didn't discuss farts.
You're right.
That'll be on our next show. I got a chance to do it. There
okay,
it is.
All right. Should I go
public
on? We've
radio.
Lost every listener.
It's public radio. They can handle it.
Or anyway, if you missed anything during the show or just want to download our show podcast, visit us on the web.
At ZorbaPastor.org or through Facebook.
And don't forget, you can call us anytime at 800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's not intended as a medical diagnosis, so please do check with your doc. Our executive producer is Carl Christensen. Our technical director is Brad Kohlberg. Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Tom Clark, hoping that you'll join us on the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
Did you miss something on today's show? Simply go to ZorbaPastor.org to catch up on all things Zorba. There you will find recipes from the show, links to the Facebook page, Zorba's Healthy Living articles, and you can subscribe to the weekly podcast. On the web, that's ZorbaPastor.org.